This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of Your Legal Rights, we're going to be talking about estate planning for same-sex couples. We will probably get into talking about estate planning issues for heterosexual couples also, but we're going to focus initially on same-sex couples and the starting with the two Supreme Court recent decisions in June dealing with the DOMA, the domestic federal case, as well as the California Prop 8 case. My guests are trust and estates attorney. They're estate planning attorneys. That's what all of us understand. They're members of the trust and estates section of the State Bar of California, Virginia Palmer of the Oakland law firm of Wendell Rosen Black and Dean, and Gene Johnston of the San Francisco law firm of Johnston, Kinney, and Zuleika. Did I pronounce Zuleika?
Zuleika.
Zuleika. Zuleika. I wondered how I would
do that. You got real close.
Okay. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Well, welcome to the program. Thank you very much. We had, of course, at the end of June, the U.S. Supreme Court came down with its decision, which was a standing decision in Prop 8.
Yes.
And the DOMA case, Defense of Marriage Act, which was more than a standing issue. And I'm wondering if you would briefly just explain those two cases, just very briefly, and then let's get into the issues.
Sure. I'll start with Prop 8, which was a California case that went up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And what the U.S. Supreme Court found was that the supporters of Prop 8, which denied same-sex couples the right to marry in California, did not have standing or the legal right to appeal Judge Vaughn Walker's decision striking down Prop 8. And the other case Gene's going to talk about, which is Windsor versus the United States, was a DOMA case, which is the Defense of Marriage Act, which is the federal act.
And the basis of the Windsor case, Edie Windsor and her spouse were married in Canada. Her spouse died, and Edie Windsor needed to pay federal income taxes.
And a lot.
Federal estate taxes,
lot,
$300,000 plus.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, $360,000.
$360,000 at death. Mm-hmm. Whereas under federal law, there's something called an unlimited marital deduction, which means that a surviving spouse receives all property tax-free.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So Mrs. Windsor challenged the law, and she won.
And will she, practically speaking, as far as you know, will she be refunded that $360,000?
And interest.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yes. Yes, she will.
That's good to know.
Right.
All right. Now, President Obama ordered the federal agencies to comply with the DOMA case. What does that mean?
Well, what we hope it means is that the head of all the regulatory agencies will start to revise the regulations and instruct their staff and educate their staff and train their staff about how to treat same-sex married couples the same as they would heterosexual married
mm-hmm.
couples.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We do have two different things happening with DOMA, which so what happened with the Windsor case was Section 3 of the Defense of Marriage Act was struck down,
mm-hmm.
but Section 2 remains. And Section 2 says that no state, territory, tribal nation, or possession of the United States has to recognize same-sex marriages from other states. So that's still valid law.
That's in violation, or we have the full faith and credit under our Constitution. That's in violation of the full faith and credit provision, is it not?
Yes. I would argue it is.
But that has not yet been decided or presented yet to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Correct. Right.
Okay. Are you happy with the way that the U.S. Supreme Court dealt with the Prop 8 case, which I thought was kind of a sidestep? And Justice Kennedy, Anthony Kennedy, I thought his decision or his minority opinion mm-hmm. was much more convincing to me than the Chief Justices. I wonder what thoughts you have on that.
Oh,
it do you was, agree it, with them sidestepping it?
I agree that's what we thought would happen.
Okay.
That they would
would
dodge the bullet on this mm-hmm. one.
That was the predictability.
That was the predictive outcome.
All right. What are the problems that people had before DOMA, before the DOMA decision? same-sex couples, let's say whether they were registered domestic partners, which is California law, maybe they had gotten married under California law. What was the problem in terms of, let's say, inheritance-wise prior to DOMA?
Well, prior to DOMA, if the couple were registered domestic partners or had been married under state law, they were treated the same.
They were, as heterosexual.
Under state law, they had the same legal rights and benefits.
I see.
What they didn't have access to, and registered domestic partners still do not have access to, are the federal benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And in the estate planning context, the biggest benefit that we deal with is the unlimited marital deduction.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the import of that has substantially decreased now that you can leave. It's now $5.25 million tax-free to anyone before the estate tax is implemented. So with or without DOMA, that would have been more significant to a lot of people. But now what happens with the DOMA's fall is at least for married couples, they are protected with the unlimited marital deduction. They also can do their planning around concepts of having survivor benefits under Social Security.
Mm-hmm. Which they did not have before.
They did not have before. The access to federal pensions, mm-hmm. which may not have been available before.
Right.
Different income tax options on receiving, you know, IRAs mm-hmm. from a spouse mm-hmm. and abilities to roll those over into spousal IRAs. There's just innumerable benefits that now accrue.
In light of DOMA and in light of how this is helping same-sex couples who do have either a domestic partnership or perhaps were married or will become married under California law now. What is it that has happened in the past with, let's say, family members challenging what one of the same-sex couples his or her rights would have been had there been proper estate planning?
Well, prior to registered domestic partnerships or recognition, any kind of statewide legal status created. That's what domestic partners mm-hmm. do. They create a legal status. Marriage creates a legal status. Before that is that significant others or partners were strangers at law and didn't have statutory rights to fall back on. And therefore, if someone died without a will or without a state plan in place, is that their partner wasn't entitled to receive anything mm-hmm. unless adequate steps were taken. Even if adequate steps were taken, if someone had a will, someone had a trust, had property in joint tenancy or beneficiary designation, they were also susceptible to those challenges from family members saying there was undue influence or incapacity really didn't believe this. I mean, I even had a case where a couple that had been together for almost 30 years and had had a relationship with the now decedent's family and brother, is that that brother actually came into my office after his brother had died and said, well, they really weren't happy together and they weren't married. I don't think he really wanted to leave him everything.
So I want it.
Yeah. So I want it. Even though they had accumulated all of this wealth together.
Over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. What about under California law now? Is there any point to someone who's in a registered domestic partnership relationship under California law wanting to try to go beyond that and get married under California law?
Oh, I mean,
is there any advantage to doing that?
Well, the advantage of being married are all of the federal benefits.
Okay.
And the federal burdens. So it's a combination of both.
Mm-hmm.
And the question of how this relationship may be recognized other places.
Mm-hmm. So if you were going to go from California, if you had a domestic partnership under California law and you went to some other state that didn't, how would that be dealt with?
It depends on the laws of that state.
Okay. It's all such an individual thing.
Right, whether or not they have laws prohibiting recognition of any same-sex relationship or not. And I think you also want to be careful that to make sure that people understand that being a registered domestic partner will give you certain benefits and protections in the state of California. Marriage will give you those same plus additional ones. So mm-hmm. when we talk about this, it's very important because a lot of my clients, for instance, are both. They've registered with the state of California and they've married either in California or in another jurisdiction that recognizes marriage so that they have as much protection as they could possibly have.
So if they, while we were having the problems leading up to the Supreme Court's decision on Prop 8, after Judge Walker came down with his decision, which was back, 2008, something like that?
I think it was 8.
I think it was a while ago.
It was 8.
It was 2008 because we had that 3 or 4 month period when marriages happened in 08.
Yeah, and then when marriages were not happening, so people went out of state to get married and in a state that had that permitted same-sex couples to be married and came back here. Let's say now, is that marriage that was good in that other state coming back here, is that going to be honored here now in California?
Yes. California actually has a statute that recognizes marriages that took place outside of California after Prop 8 passed.
Okay.
That calls them essentially a marriage equivalent.
I see. Okay.
But now I think under
now
Prop
I think those
8
are recognized
as marriages
since Prop 8 is as if it never existed.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So those marriages, because marriage is recognized in California, and we give full faith and credit to those marriages from other states, they are now recognized. They had this sort of vague status for a while.
Right.
But that has been
right. I think it'll be one of the things that gets cleaned up in the code.
Yeah. And just to go back
to the other point, it was the California
Supreme Court when they ruled that it was unconstitutional to prohibit marriage. That's when we had the 2008 window.
Yes.
And it wasn't until that was challenged that Judge Walker issued his opinion.
All right. What about is there an issue here today at all? Of whether or not someone, same sex, whether they should register as a domestic partner or get married. Are there estate planning issues that someone should be thinking about as to whether or not they really do want to get married now, for example?
I would actually broaden the question, if I may,
please,
and put it just outside just the estate planning context and look at it as a whole issue. Should they marry?
Yeah,
and this
okay.
is culturally,
I should have said it that
yes,
way. It,
culturally, this is a huge shift for our community. But I think they need to look at certainly the legal ramifications, the financial ramifications, mm-hmm. but the spiritual, the psychological, the commitment to the relationship, the marriage. You know, one of my concerns has been is that people will sort of get caught up in the euphoria of what's happened, which is incredible and wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And think that somehow getting married is going to solve problems that may exist in the relationship.
I see.
I really think it behooves everyone to step back and look and find out, you know, meet with their estate planning attorney, meet with maybe a family law attorney, depending on what the issues are regarding children or other issues, meet with their CPA. Gene will talk about what the income tax issues are because they're mm-hmm. considerable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, look at this as a whole.
But I think the point is that every couple, straight or gay,
right.
should be looking at all of these issues. But there's still the fundamental question is, do you want to be married?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, just because you are married does not really validate a relationship any more than two people that have been together for 50 years
sure.
and not married. It's the society may put validation on it, but it doesn't. Those other people's relationships should not be diminished simply mm-hmm. because now the law recognizes
it. If some people, some same-sex couples have been together for a long time, and I don't know what the statistics are at all, But they are not a registered domestic partnership. They didn't get married at the time when they could, when California allowed it some years back. So there's no legal relationship with them unless they've done some very significant estate planning.
Correct.
So what's the situation with those persons who are not domestic partners, are not married? Let's say they don't have any estate planning documents, but they've been together for years. What recommendation, Jean, would you make to them?
See a lawyer.
See a lawyer. See a lawyer, huh?
See a lawyer. Yeah. Get some things taken care of. There's that responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you want to protect someone.
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing the estate planning because you want to protect people.
Right. And you want to provide for the smooth transition during incapacity and at death. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing. That statistically, the older you get, the more likely you are to have a significant period of being incapacitated.
Sure.
And if you don't have an advanced health care directive naming your partner, you don't have any statutory protection for that either.
You do not.
You do not.
You do
in
not.
In California. And so, therefore, you know, you're in the same status with other people in the family about making health care decisions for your incapacitated partner.
And even in those situations where the long-term couple, where the family members who are going to be inheriting everything because the proper planning wasn't done, even if those family members want the surviving partner to have the property, they have to go through all of these legal machinations to have that happen. And you end up paying a whole lot more money to make something happen that could have been simply taken care of.
So you're talking, I think if I may, and because this is not my field of law, but I think what you're talking about is people need to explore, if they don't have it already, living trusts.
Well, not even living trust, having just even a simple will.
Just a simple will.
Simple
and
will.
And powers of attorney.
Powers of attorney for health care and for finances.
Yes.
That at a minimum. A trust is not for everyone, it's not necessary. And perhaps now that we have this higher exemption amount, the
5.25 million.
A lot of some of the planning reasons for having trust aren't
really
necessary.
Okay. That's a very good thought.
So it simplified. I mean, DOMA has simplified things greatly, along with the estate tax exemption amount, both of those in combination.
Yeah. And the only qualifier I would put on that is the incapacity issue, that if you do have a trust and someone becomes incapacitated, it is far easier and less expensive to handle the administration of their finances during that incapacity than it is to go establish a conservatorship through the court. Mm-hmm. And that can happen even if you have powers of attorney, because sometimes third parties refuse to recognize a power of attorney if it's, quote, stale, too old.
When you say stale, what do you mean too old? You mean it's 20 years back?
No, it could be even shorter than that. It could
be
a year too old. If it's a title company and you want to sell a piece of real property, they're going to be very hesitant.
They want it within a few months. And I've had that personally happen.
How can, I mean, they're practicing law by doing it. How can they justify that approach?
I recommend a trust for anyone who has over $150,000 of assets, because that's the limitation on a probate, full probate administration.
I
think it really pays to go at least talk to somebody about the options and getting those different things in order. And Virginia's absolutely right. A lot of estate planning is life planning as well, to make sure that the right people are taking care of you, both you and your money.
If one of the partners, and I'm talking about whether it's a domestic partnership or a marriage under California law, if one of the same-sex couples has a home in his or her name, and I'm talking about same-sex now, but the other partner does not, the other partner's name is not on, what's the consequence? What's the potential consequence, whether they have a domestic partnership or a marriage, in light of the fact that the one who dies is the one whose name is on the deed for the home? What's the problem with that today, if there is?
Well, the problem would be if they didn't have an estate plan. If they have an estate plan, either a trust or a will, or the properties we don't have that form of deed in California. But if it had been a community property opposed to your
yes.
illustration of being separate property, then they could. So the problem is if they don't have any of that. If they don't have anything, by intestate succession rules in California, that property is not going to pass to the – it will pass to the surviving domestic partner one-third if there are children, or one-half if there are just parents. So it's going to be very unlikely that the surviving partner
– would get the whole thing?
Would get the whole thing.
Really?
Really.
That's interesting. All right, I want to give you a chance to call in if you have some same-sex estate planning issues or if you have just estate planning issues that you'd like to pose on the program. Here's our number, 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. And if you're listening to us anywhere in the state on the Internet, should you have radio on your computer through the Internet at www.kow.org, that's the same number, 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on estate planning for same-sex couples. My guests are estate planners Virginia Palmer, whose office is in Oakland, and Jean Johnson, whose office is in San Francisco. And so I hope you, if you have some estate planning issues or problems or questions, that you will join us with that, because this is something that with the recent decisions by the U.S. Supreme Court in the latter part of June, the Prop 8 decision, which is a standing decision, and the DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act, the federal act decision, which is really more a substantive decision, there's a lot that you might want to possibly talk about. In any event, what have we not even talked about that you feel we didn't even touch upon in the first few minutes of the program?
I would have Jean talk about the income tax issue.
Let's do that.
In terms of, you know, couples, you know, come to me and say, well, we want to get married, but we've heard that there may or may not be these income tax consequences. And so just maybe if Jean could just give a short explanation of what they should be looking at.
Would you do that, Jean?
Sure.
Please?
Yeah, sure.
Well,
sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, the next hour or two. Yeah,
right, right.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I need to start with like a very quick evolution of things, is that prior to the domestic partnerships or even in the first year of the domestic partnerships, there was just, you know, couple registered their taxes, each one just filed separate tax returns, mm-hmm, reporting their own income.
So it's a separate tax return.
Separate tax returns,
okay,
reporting their own income.
Yeah.
And even though domestic partners had community property after 2005 and
under California law.
Under California law, and the IRS should have said that domestic partners could split the community property mm-hmm. income and report it on each of their mm-hmm. individual returns, mm-hmm. the IRS said no, couldn't
really?
Do that.
Really?
The IRS did shift their position in 2010, where it applied to 2009, and said no, domestic partners can split their income and each report half of the community.
Even if one made more
right.
than the other.
And that was actually, for a lot of domestic partners, mm-hmm. was a real boon in tax payments because it could cut the tax liability significantly.
So if you could split
right,
it.
Right, because if you had one person who made $200,000 and mm-hmm. one made was a stay-at-home
right.
parent. Suddenly,
right.
they both only reported $100,000 of income. They both walked up the brackets and reported significantly less combined taxes.
I see.
Now, with married, we'll be filing joint returns on a federal level or married filing separately. And on a case-by-case basis, suddenly, you know, the lesbian and gay couples who are now married may be subject to the, you know, that onerous marriage penalty that straight couples always complain about.
So there'd be more, the taxes
right.
may be higher.
Correct. So I have, clients whose tax situation changed. If we say baseline was when they didn't split income. when they were able to split income, that saved them a combined $10,000. And now that they have to file jointly, that increases it by $20,000. So we've had this swing. And that's not for every couple. You have to look at each, all of the income, the deductions, everything else. But it will be quite a surprise to a few of the taxpayers out there. So that
obviously you want to talk with your CPA or your tax attorney about this.
Well, but as you said, you know, here's contrary, because I am a tax lawyer, but I can't let I would never advise anyone to lead their life based on tax consequences.
Well, that's a good thought. Let's take a call. Jeffrey, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. So I have a question. It's in two parts, really. My brother, who is a tax attorney and who has four children, wrote my parents, I believe it's called an irrevocable trust. And so one of the terms of it is that I, as one of the three now, you know, brothers who have inherited this trust, I can only leave my portion to a spouse or to lineal descendants of my parents. So if I marry a man, then will I be able to will that to him?
Wow, that's interesting.
So I guess the first question I would ask is, what state law is governing the trust?
California.
Well, then I would argue that under California law, if you marry a man, that's recognized and that the state would recognize that as your spouse, him as your spouse.
You would just have to look, though, very carefully within the document. Oftentimes there are definitions, and the they may define spouse as an opposite sex spouse. So without that, yeah, it's a spouse.
Jeffrey, stay with us, will you, for just a minute? All right, it's 728 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KALW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. We're doing a program on estate planning for same-sex couples, but also if you have questions that are in the more general area of estate planning, please feel free to call in and ask a question, make a comment, etc. 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. Again, if you're anywhere in the state of California and listening to us on the internet, it's www.kalw.org. That same phone number, 1-415-841-4134, is for you also. My guests are estate planning attorneys Virginia Palmer of the Oakland law firm of Wendell, Rosen, Black, and Dean, and Gene Johnston of the San Francisco law firm of Johnston, Kinney, and Zuleika. I got it.
You got it.
I got it, finally. This is good. All right, so let's do this. Let's, Jeffrey, did you have any other question?
Yeah, go ahead. Thank you for that. That helps and clarifies. The other question I have is, so one of the, you know, assets that I have is a home in Oakland that I own outright. So I have a reverse mortgage on this that I got some time ago, and at that time, of course, I couldn't be married to this person, and so I just named myself as an owner of the house, but my intention would be to include him on it. So is that possible to, I mean, this is kind of a different area, I know, but is that possible to revisit with a reverse mortgage?
I would think that you'd need to contact the company that did the reverse mortgage and look at the terms. I have very little experience with reverse mortgages, but I would look at the company and see what they would say. My guess is they might have some issue with that.
Well, I think part of it, they may have the issues because reverse mortgages are often predicated on the age of the borrower and the amount of the credit, unlike a traditional mortgage that's not. But those are all governed by federal guidelines, and usually public policy wants to encourage marriage rather than discourage marriage, so there probably is something built into that.
Should he, in light of that, contact a real property attorney?
I would start by contacting the lender.
by contacting the lender and get some input from the lender, see what they have to say.
Right.
And you might pose the question as in general neutral terms.
Right.
If I get married, you know, what about
my
spouse?
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to same sex.
Right.
Well, Jeffrey, we're going to move on. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, take care. Thank you very much for calling. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KALW listeners like you. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. You should be able to get a human being on the phone. Tell them what the problem is, whatever you have, and they'll do their best to try to find someone who's experienced and set you up for a half an hour consultation. Depending on the county, for half an hour, it could be a low of $25 or a high of $35. It does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service because this is really a fine and very helpful public service. All right. Our number, 1415-841-4134. And we have Eve. Welcome to the program.
Hello. I have a question that's not a spouse question, but it's about a living trust that I have. I have my house in a living trust and some other things. And I'm just wondering, a simple question, you know, I don't have long-term care. If I have to, you know, go into a home, would I be able to get Medicaid, or is my home safe, Medicare? Is my home safe? Would I have to sell my home and use that money?
So let me. You said you have no long-term care. Now, that is no long-term care insurance. Is that what you're saying, Eve?
Yeah, I don't have long-term care.
Okay, so if you had to go into some kind of a home because you are no longer independent, you're wondering what are the potential negative consequences with respect to your home? Do you have to sell that? Is it subject to whatever the cost may be for your being in some kind of facility? What comments do you have on that, Gene? Wait a minute, Eve. Let me get Virginia to respond before you say anything further. Hold on, if you would.
All right. So this is a bit outside my area, but first of all, Medicare isn't going to help you much with a nursing home, except if you qualify because of a recent hospitalization. There's a limited period of time as long as the nursing home can certify, essentially, that you're in rehab. Medi-Cal allows a house to be what we call an exempt asset as long as you have the subjective intent to return home. However, upon your death, your heirs or the person in your trustee has to notify the state of California that you were a Medi-Cal recipient, and they can put in a claim for reimbursement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so a living trust really doesn't protect you from that kind of thing.
A living trust is not really asset protection.
Mm-hmm.
I see. So, but the living trust would only be that it would protect it from going into probate. Is that it?
Essentially, it's a planning mechanism for transferring your assets at death, and it also allows for the administration of your affairs, financial affairs, during incapacity.
Without it having to be in the court.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, Eve?
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Evan, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you very much. You provide a great service.
Well, thank you.
And thank you to your participants. They give their time freely, and I very much appreciate that as whatever I am. And I have a question concerning both New York State, and I assume it's very similar in California. A lady who, that would be my significant other's mother owned a very famous ballet school.
Mm.
And she had for 20 years left in her will the shares to the ballet school to her two daughters.
One of whom is your significant other. Is that right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, thank you.
Okay,
for this. All
right.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Go ahead.
And one's in New York and one's in California. The one in New York, 20 days before the mother passes from smoking too much, whatever that disease is, not lung disease, not lung cancer, but
emphysema.
Emphysema, thank you.
Yeah.
Puts a sheet of paper in front of her mother and has her mom sign off
the whole thing, huh?
Makes a living trust and does an inter vivos transfer of 100% of the shares.
Yeah.
Would your guest comment on the challenges if they were representing the party in California, my significant other? Because I first think that a transfer 20 days prior to death is pretty odd.
How long ago, Evan, was this that this occurred?
Well, it happened farther than probate, but it was reaffirmed by the other sister. They like each other very much, and so that complicates it.
Well, let's go back. How long ago was this that the sister in New York did this 20 days before the mother's death?
6 years ago.
So there's a statute of limitations problem, certainly.
No,
but
no, because no? The as I stated, I'm sorry, the sister in New York reaffirmed that mom intended us to have half.
Oh, I misunderstood. All right. So the sister in New York said, sis, I want you to share with me 50-50 on this. Is that right?
Yes.
But what? So then what is your question?
My question is, how would your participants go about correcting this? Because now the sister is saying, yes, I'm glad to send you $5,000 a month, but I won't give you what you have the right to.
I won't give you the whole 50%. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Outright? Oh, so she changed her mind. I got it. Well, you know, this is, has your significant other seen an attorney on this?
Yes.
Is there a lawsuit? Is there a lawsuit that's ongoing, Evan, on this?
No. That is the whole thing. They don't want to sue each other, and so I've just gotten.
You want to sue?
No.
No. Okay.
I don't want to destroy the relationship between.
Well, I don't blame you. So you're wondering what my guests would suggest on this, that the sister in New York is only offering $5,000 a month as opposed to just giving to your significant other the total 50% of the value of the ballet school or whatever.
Yes, that's one question. But the more specific question is that I believe the female member of your panel.
We have two female members here.
I'm so
there's
sorry.
Virginia and Jean.
Right.
Yeah. I'm the male. I'm the male on the panel here. Yeah.
Okay.
Evan, maybe you have not been hearing well. Maybe that's part of the problem here. Go ahead.
Well, no. People ask me to turn off all my radios, phones.
Turn off your brain, etc. But go ahead. Go ahead with your question.
The question is there a limit to what can be transferred in an inter vivos transfer? Because I believe a female in your panel mentioned that there was a $150,000 limit before it went into probate.
No, what I was referring to is that's a probate in California, a jurisdictional sort of issue.
Yeah.
The amount, if you're... Let's just call it your sister-in-law was to transfer to your partner one half of the stock. If that's in the form of a gift, then she can gift right now $5.25 million tax-free, but it uses up or eliminates
her ability. Evan, don't interrupt. Listen, if you would. Don't interrupt. Don't interrupt, Evan. Listen to what Jean is saying, please. Continue, Jean.
So the 150 I was talking about has nothing to do with your case here. It's a question of what are the tax consequences of this transfer, I think is what you're asking about.
No. I thought that there might, that you might have been stating that there was a maximum amount that a living trust could transfer.
No. There is, before a probate is necessary, you can a decedent, $150,000 of a decedent's assets can be collected by the beneficiaries by a form of an affidavit. Otherwise, when you go over $150,000 of assets, that's when probate starts being required. The reason you want to have a trust is that the amount over the $150,000 is to avoid probate by putting the assets in the trust.
So, in other words, if you want to put all of the assets into a trust, by doing that, you can avoid probate.
Correct.
Okay. Does that help you at all, Evan?
No, because that was the exact amount that the first transfer was, $150,000.
Well, that may have just been a coincidence.
Yeah, I think it
has
was,
nothing
Evan.
To do with your case.
Evan, we're going to move on. My suggestion is, is there a lawsuit that exists at this point?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, I think what you might do, because you have many questions and my guests are not in a position that they can continue to respond.
No, listen
to me, Evan. Evan, I think what you might do for your own satisfaction, my suggestion is, where do you live? What city?
Jefferson Street in San Francisco.
Yeah. I think, why don't you call the Lawyer Referral Service for the San Francisco Bar. Did you get the phone number?
Yeah, but it's wasting $35. I can tell
you
the truth.
You don't want to pay $35? You're a cheapskate, Evan. Okay, I'm going to move on. Thank you, Evan, for calling. Thanks very much for calling. Bye-bye. All right, our number, 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. You know, I'm a great believer... I started this program over 29 years ago as a proposal to the State Bar of California because I felt it was very important that people have access to lawyers on live radio and that people have some idea of some direction of what to go. The whole point of lawyer referral is to give you the basic information that may help you to determine what rights do I have, what obligations do I have, and frankly, whether it's $35 or whatever it is, it's money well spent. And so if you're going to quibble about that, you're going to just cause yourself all kinds of mental anguish. In any event, Kim, welcome to the program.
Hi, I have a question. My father recently finished his trust with his wife. And it looks like they're getting a divorce. And
Wait a minute, Kim. Your father just finished a trust with his wife, not your mother, of course, I guess.
Oh, not my mother. My mother died.
And they're now going to get a divorce?
Yes, he's 85, and it's quite difficult, but what can I do?
But go ahead.
Anyway, they're not very unhappy. Does divorce law supersede the trust law?
So in other words, you're saying if they get a divorce, does the divorce negate the trust?
Yes.
Okay. So, Virginia.
So divorces sort of come in parts, or can come in parts. There's a divorce as to status, and there's a dissolution and determination of property rights. So once someone files for a divorce, there are automatic temporary restraining orders that go into place, and they prohibit or restrict the what you can do with your existing estate plan. And so it's very important that if your father wants to do something, perhaps revoke the trust or amend it in any way, then he needs to have his family law attorney address that with very carefully. The second part is that once the status dissolution happens, the code provides that gifts or bequests to the now divorced spouse lapse, and it's as if that spouse, now ex-spouse, predeceased.
Really?
But you can have a period of time where, you know, because divorces can go on for years. So you can have a period of time. So it's very important that the family law lawyer look at the issue, especially given your father's age.
Yeah.
And, you know, do the requirements necessary to be able to, you know, there's notification requirements before you can just unilaterally revoke a trust, those sorts of things. So you have to look first at the language in the trust. And you have to look at it in conjunction with the automatic temporary restraining orders. Some of the orders are on the back of the summons, but they're not complete. So it's very important to actually have the family law lawyer look at the code section.
So Kim, let me make sure I understand this. You're saying, is there a trust that actually is in existence right now?
Yeah, it's in existence. I mean, there's a little bit of an amendment that he wants to make, but now he wants to get a divorce. And so, you know.
Well,
has he filed for divorce?
What to advise him for to do first? Should he amend the trust first and then get a divorce, or get a divorce and then amend the trust?
Well, and is the trust a joint trust?
Yes, it is.
All right. So, you know, you have to look at the. Yeah, it's more complicated. You have to look at the provisions of the trust about amendments and whether the amendment requires the consent and the signature of both settlors, the people who created the trust. But in general, I want to stress that, not know if it works for your father's case or not. It's better to amend before you dissolve it. But usually that is a separate property trust, not community.
The only thing he wants to amend is that the dispersal of the trust just be clean, 50-50. Instead, it says that we have to wait. If he dies, then the wife gets the money until she dies, and then it's dispersed to his heirs. Mm. So he wants to just make a clean break if he's dead. 50-50, and then divorce law 50-50.
He really should be contacting a lawyer before he files for the divorce, and probably not the lawyer who drafted the trust, because that lawyer
is
conflicted out.
So he should be seeing a new lawyer to look at the trust and take those actions before proceeding with the divorce.
Is your father fully competent at this time?
He is, but not perfect. You know, it's like in a wavering moment.
How about his wife? Is she competent?
Same story.
Ah, well, that further complicates it. So is your father asking you to be of some assistance to him?
Yes, he is.
And where do you live, Kim?
Well, I live in Berkeley, California, and he lives in Los Angeles.
Ah, that's a problem for you being up here and him being down there.
Yes, one of my
suggestions, Kim, is this, and I asked my guests to certainly give input on this. I think that what you might do is go to the Board of Legal Specialization website, www.californiaspecialist.org. That's all lowercase, no spaces. www.californiaspecialist.org. And look for, I would suggest, estate planning attorneys. That's one of the specialties of the Board of Legal Specialization. And see, there's going to be a lot of them down there. And get some names and phone numbers and make some calls. And find out what would the charge be for an initial consultation. One of the major funders of my program is the Board of Legal Specialization. And I know that bankruptcy attorneys generally, at least in my experience, and this is not something your father's looking into, but bankruptcy attorneys who are certified specialists will give an initial consultation without any charge. I don't know about estate planning attorneys, but this is a good way to find out who they are by going to the Board of Legal Specialization website and for Los Angeles.
Okay, thank you very much.
And now, wait a minute.
One
Virginia
more comment.
Has something. Yeah.
When you interview them on the phone, ask them if they have experience with someone who may be transitioning into a period of incapacity.
Yeah.
Because it's a whole different ball game in a dissolution.
That's a very serious issue, yeah.
Okay.
Good luck to you, Kim.
Thank you.
Yeah, nice to have you call.
Okay.
Good luck.
Right.
Good luck to you and good luck to your father. We have a few more minutes. If you have a question, comment, or a concern in the trust and estates or estate planning area, 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. If you do not have a will, if you do not have a trust, why not? Find out, why don't you pose the question, do I really need to have a will? Do I really need to have a trust? It would be nice to have you say that if you don't have one. My guests are estate planning attorneys, Jean Johnston, whose office is in San Francisco, and Virginia Palmer, whose office is in Oakland. And so if you would like to call in with your question, your comment, etc., please do so. Let's take a couple. Married couple, let's say, who has title of their home in both of their names, and I think the presumption under California law is that it's community property. Am I right on that, Jean?
Correct.
Okay.
If acquired during marriage.
Acquired during marriage. Okay. So even if it says John and Jane Smith in joint tenancy, is that considered to be community property under California law?
Well, that's kind of a complicated question.
All right. Let me withdraw that.
Okay.
If it says John and Jane Smith as community property owners, or maybe it just says their name, John and Jane Smith owners, that would be presumed community property.
If it was acquired during marriage,
If it was acquired during marriage. Is there some tax question here with respect to that kind of thing? If you have that in as joint tenancy or not joint tenancy, as community property, I take it under the estate planning laws, assuming that it's not worth over $5.25 million, mm-hmm. there's no issue if one dies and leaves the other.
Well, no, the biggest issue about whether the property is community property or separate property is that if it is community property at the death of the first spouse, both halves get a step up in basis. That means mm-hmm. the survivor is treated as having paid for the property what it is worth at the date of death. Therefore, if they go to sell property, there
you get the stepped-up basis.
State, and there's not as much capital gains.
So, in other words, if the property was purchased 20 years ago at $100,000 or $200,000 and now it's worth $1 million, and one of the parties dies, the stepped-up basis from a capital gain standpoint goes up to $1 million.
Million on both?
On both.
For both of them. If it's separate property, only the decedent spouse's
separate.
Half goes up.
Really? Oh, that's
yes.
interesting.
So that's where having things held as community versus separate property, there's a lot of advantages.
Right. And the other part of that, though, Jean, isn't it if they're registered domestic partners, they'll get the step up in basis for California purposes, but not for federal purposes.
Correct.
Whether they're married, they'll get it for both state and federal.
Right.
So there you are. Okay. Michelle, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello. Yeah, I have a question. This might be, I don't know whether it's valid or not, but we're both non-citizens, but we both are green card holders. My partner and I were both married before Proposition 8 was passed, and we don't have any wills written yet, but I wanted to know, do her benefits and or my benefits, whoever dies first, would they automatically go to the remaining spouse?
When you say your benefits, what are you referring to, Michelle? What kind of benefits?
Like, 401k.
Ah,
and
you were married in California?
Yes.
Okay. Before Prop 8?
Correct.
So as I understand it now, with being married before Prop 8 and now with the U.S. Supreme Court saying this is a standing issue and we go back to Judge Walker's decision, mm-hmm. her marriage is good.
Her marriage is valid.
Valid.
Some of it is a question on your California residence, correct?
Yes.
Some of it, well, the most important thing is naming your spouse as the beneficiary under these plans, if that's where you want these plans to go.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get into little more complicated issues if you died without naming the spouse as the beneficiary. You get into issues under ERISA and the laws of what does your spouse have a claim because of federal law. So it is more complicated than that. But in general, what you want to do is to make sure that you have the appropriate parties named as your beneficiaries. Then you don't have to worry about what is the default provision under the law.
And is this something under a 401k that you can review and change now?
Correct.
Absolutely.
So there you are, Michelle.
Right. And I would also keep a copy of the beneficiary designation and the proof of when you submitted it.
Okay, great.
Does that help you?
That's perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for calling. All right, last call. Gregory, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you, and thanks for doing the program. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Quick question. So I'm in a long-term relationship with a same-sex partner. We entered into a domestic partnership in the state of California in 2009. My question is, I have pretty substantial assets that I had before I entered into the domestic partnership, and I have nothing in place. I have no estate planning, no will, etc. So in the event of that I precede my partner in death, I want to make sure he's taken care of, but I also want to make sure I have two young nieces, and I would like to make sure that some of my assets go to them as well. So the question is, I hear living wills, I hear trusts, I hear, different estate plans. Given my situation and what my objectives are, could you kind of just very quickly highlight for me what sort of legal document do you think would be best for me, and that I'm mostly concerned with protecting the assets and then, fairly distributing between my partner and my two young nieces?
Wow, you're asking a lot of, there are a lot of issues on that, right, Gregory? Do you have 30 seconds, one of you, to respond? Because we're running out of time.
Well, I would say that in general, with meeting with the lawyer, what you most likely need is a trust. Right. But you also need real clarification that the property that you have is your separate property and not your community property together.
Okay.
You don't have a legal right to dispose of his 50% interest in your community property. So that's one, is to have that clarification.
Okay.
The second is I would recommend a trust in order to avoid probate issues, even though as soon as you get into with your nieces, you don't have the expedited transfer procedures you would for a spouse. But is to do, the bottom line, though, is to do comprehensive planning with your partner as well, so that everybody's on the same page, so there's no surprises later on. That's the best way to prevent problems.
We have run out of time. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
All right, I want to thank you both very much for joining us. My estate planning guests, Virginia Palmer, whose office is in Oakland, and Gene Johnson, whose office is in San Francisco. Thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar of California, the Family Law section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. If you are concerned that you might get in an accident with someone and you get injured, we're going to be talking about the importance of having adequate uninsured motorist coverage as well as underinsured motorist insurance coverage. My guests will be personal injury attorneys Casey Kaufman and Shauna Rahman. That's next week on Your Legal Rights. Thanks for joining us this week on Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We'll be right back.